You're listening to The Fuse Show, where wealth management and tech innovation converge. We break down the keys to success, as well as the technologies, mindsets, and solutions that will propel top advisors into the future. Here are your hosts, George Figuera and Ryan Donovan.
Welcome to The Fuse Show, a podcast brought to you by Orion with your hosts, Ryan Donovan and me, George Figuera. Today's guest is Noreen Beeman, Head of Leadership Development and Executive Coach at East Bay Merchant Partners, and of course, Vice Chair of Orion's Board of Directors. We're excited to have Noreen with us today to share her perspective on the history of Orion and our future as we approach the end of the year, particularly considering her experience building one of the largest stamps in the country. Let's dive in. Welcome to the show, Noreen Beeman. It's great to have you on The Fuse Show to talk and see you again and get to chat with you. We really appreciate the time.
I'm looking forward to spend some time with both of you.
So we've been trying something new the last few episodes of starting the discussion with a in-depth, thought-provoking question. Okay. I don't know how this segment will play out, but it's 2023.
Okay.
Why do you think it still takes so long to make a piece of bread into toast?
You know, I actually want to talk more about, like, I know it takes so long, but what happens when sometimes it's burnt, sometimes it's not done? It's very frustrating, I have to say.
This podcast just found its topic. George is very passionate about this.
This is where I feel like we are on the same page, because there's a darkness setting to toast. Mm-hmm. I've never met anyone who's like, I just want it to be just this side of bread, or so dark that it's like eating a piece of charcoal. There's a pretty standard level of doneness for toast. And I feel like we could get there in 20 to 25 seconds.
And we're not there. And it just kills me. I will tell you, I find that very, very challenging as well. Not figure that out myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The goal here with the podcast is to change your life forever when you make toast. You'll think about us and you'll be like, you know what? This does take too long. This is ridiculous.
And when you find that perfect way to do that, I think you should actually share that very broadly with all of America.
Yeah.
Maybe actually globally. I think that's something everyone would benefit from.
Yeah. I mean, I think frictionless account opening is good, but think about how many on-time meetings there will be when you're leaving the Hilton Garden Inn when putting the English muffin through just once. Just once.
In hotels, it's like no one even bothers to toast their bread because they're like, I don't have 15 minutes to stand here.
The conveyor belt?
It'll be, people will stop saying it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And they'll be like, it's the greatest thing since quick toast. This is the greatest thing since quick toast.
Get on it, man. Get on that.
Anywho.
Well, Noreen, it's fantastic to talk to you again. And I appreciate you taking the time to join George and I on Put Up With Our Antics. But there is a serious topic here. You've been ultimately on Orion's board of directors through much of our growth trajectory. And before that, ultimately, you know, CEO of Brinker, and tremendous amount of knowledge we're looking to get into during the course of this conversation. Would you be able to just provide us a little bit of background on your bio, what you've worked on and what you're working on today?
So as you mentioned, spent 30 years at Brinker Capital. It was a privilege of a lifetime to take an organization. I was a startup CFO with 100 million under management, almost close to 30 billion at the time of the merger with Orion, and did a lot of different things. But I think what's most interesting about my tenure there, while the CEO job was amazing, it was when I was actually in sales. I mean, I was working with financial advisors, sitting across the table from them, which has informed and shaped so much of the rest of my career, by understanding the advisors that we actually serve. So that was an important part of that. Then I had the privilege to be a part of Orion and still continue to this day and get to know both of you. And more importantly, being on the inside of financial technology, which is very different than as a user. You know, we use technology as part of Brinker, but being on the inside and the product development and just the different ways in which people, you know, there's different types of skill sets that bring that to life. So that was really fun. I did that for 18 months. I just finished graduate school. So one of the things, as I stepped away from my full-time role at Orion, I went back to NYU and I spent a year in a very extensive class around organizational consulting and executive coaching. So I just finished that, humbling in all the most wonderful ways. It was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be.
Was it virtual or was it in person?
It was hybrid. So yeah. I was in person as well as virtual because we had a global cohort. So the times that we were together from a global perspective,
that
was virtual. But the rest of it, I was in person. So actually, I needed to be in person.
Did you take first day of school pics?
I did, actually. Perfect.
Just send that to us for the notes. Mm-hmm.
I have a first day of school pic with my little book bag and my dog.
That's fantastic. Actually, it's funny you say that. I do want to go back to school because I kind of stopped my career, just like yours, was on such a high trajectory. And I'm like, I don't really need any more education. I'm plenty smart as I is. So basically for myself, it's like really fulfilling when you kind of go back to the classroom and, you know, you start like consuming information again and kind of gives you a lot of ideas. It really gets the creative thoughts going, right?
I think that would be really interesting too, to go back to school knowing what you know. Like when I was in college, it's like, I don't have any sense of reality to tie back to this conversation. It's all just conceptual. You know what I'm saying? And now like being in the workforce and being in industry and then going back, I think it would be a really interesting experience. Did you find that was the case?
I did. I think there's two things. One, think about it. Every day you guys are learning something, right? That's how we get better. So continuous learning as a mantra, I think is in the bones. Executive education, I tease now, you go in, you talk to contemporaries and really smart people, you learn something and you have a glass of wine. Well, at least I had a glass of wine. You go back into legit graduate school. Now it's a different expectation. Your classmates are doing it for a very important reason. So you just can't go in there and be like, hey, look how smart I am. I realized that I became a real student. The tech from an education perspective, like this lady hasn't been in school for 36 years. Very different. And one of the things I think we should always continue to challenge, the next generation that's coming along is so exciting because they want to do great things. They want to learn. They want to do amazing things and they can do it faster because of what the tech does. Mm-hmm. But sometimes senior leaders that are so stuck maybe in their ways may not even understand that what might have taken us like 3 weeks to do because of what was available from a technology, kind of a tech tied back to what Orion does for financial advisors. Now takes a few days, maybe now takes 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can even bring that back to the old days of, you know, ACATs were like, what, 4 weeks? And then it was 2 weeks. Like so quickly we move things. So being back as a student and using the technology that was available, oh my gosh, it was wonderful. Scary, but wonderful.
Yeah, my son does 6 subjects of homework in about 5 minutes powered by Amazon Alexa and ChatGPT. So I'm curious what they're learning.
Mm-hmm. Use your resources, right? Like you want to use your resources.
Yeah. Well, in terms of the objective, you went back for organizational skills and coaching and consulting. So what are you doing with that?
Two things. One was to make me a better board member. You know, it's very different to be on a board when you're operator versus actually being on a board and providing a framework of advice. So I thought it would help me be a better board member. Two, I had an executive coach that changed my life as a CEO. And I felt that if I can give that same level of service to other leaders, that's something I'd be interested to do. But I wanted to make sure I had the right frameworks and process. I didn't want to, you know, essentially masquerade as an executive coach. Oh, I did it. Well, just because the way I did it, that is really irrelevant, is how am I being in service to those leaders that want to kind of get better. So I just started a coaching and consulting business with my old partner, Chuck Widger, through East Bay. And we're working on things. And one of my classmates has joined me in that. And I've just joined the Commonwealth Board, helping there as well. So I currently sit on the Orion Board, our Destination Mutual Fund Board, the Commonwealth Board. And then I'm also on the St. Peter's University Board. That's non-for-profit. That's where I went to school. So
very cool.
Happy to give back where I can.
Yeah. I was curious and glad to see the news that you were joining Commonwealth's advisory board. What's the overall intent with this consulting business? And specifically that one, is it going to be geared towards more maybe broker dealers, RIAs, anyone looking for anything? What's kind of the goal there?
So I would say the consulting is more where I can add some value from an advice perspective of like a new product offering and those kinds of things. For the Commonwealth board, where I'm in an advisory board position, that's really provide context based on my experience. Also, what's been so helpful there is I miss the financial advisors. Like one of the things by not being in the day-to-day in the mix, I miss where the action happens. And really, when you think of an advisor facing a client and providing that advice, which we power, right? We power at Orion and at Brinker. I was out of the loop on that. So now to be able to participate, sitting in the rooms, listening to the presentations that they're providing advisors, understanding more in the sense of the product context of what's interesting, what's not interesting, what technology tools will be really helpful. I just think it provides more context for me to be more helpful as they continue to serve their financial advisors and just taking my years of experience. I mean, that's really the opportunity there.
Yeah, you really have a great background for contributing, you know, value on the Commonwealth Board.
What are some things that you've seen that are not interesting? Is there anything you've seen where you're like,
You know what I find fascinating to me, and this is not just Commonwealth, this is more broadly, that we're still using Excel spreadsheets in any kind of capacity. I mean, like, oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. I think that's not specific to Commonwealth. That's more generally as people are trying to think of cash flow statements and these kinds of things. Like, back of the envelope, I get it, but there should be better tools always to help facilitate and especially time management. You know, when I think of sitting in the room, the human condition is always fascinating. When you think about real people have real issues, and that's why it'll always be something interesting for all of us to do in service. Yeah. And financial advice in today's world has never been more important. I think it's always been important, but it's just much more complicated, especially as people don't have pension plans anymore and those kinds of things. Like, how are we going to navigate that and helping advisors to serve that? So I find that like fascinating. And sometimes I sit back and I'm like, God, we haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like that's something, you know, we run into something like that all the time, like digital account opening. We've been trying to, you know, crack that nut now for a decade. And it's like, well, you know, we're getting there. And then all of a sudden somebody, you know, not to name names, but custodians, they basically go ahead and they're like, hey, we're going to change this entirely. Mm-hmm. Everything you've been developing toward and coaching advisors to do and their clients, we're going to completely flip that on its head. And it's all going to be so much better.
I've never understood. I've sat in roundtables and things, and everyone will sit and they'll talk about what they're doing for digital account opening to make the account opening. And there will be members of the custodian sitting there. And no one ever draws their attention and goes to those people and go, why aren't you making this easier? Like, it's all these third parties and all this stuff. And it's like, here's the two people who can actually weigh in on this.
Yeah.
It is fascinating because we think of the regulatory environment we're in. But when you step away as a consumer, you want how you interact with the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Right? You don't want it to be this hard. And that's why the opportunity for firms like Orion and others that are in this space to really help facilitate change. And it's just going to take some time, mm-hmm. much longer than we would have hoped for. But I really, truly believe this is going to happen, though.
That's great. George, I would like to take the next six questions. I'm really excited to have Noreen on the show, and I've got a whole line of questioning, unless there's something really important you're going to ask.
Let me ask one more question. You continue shoving that orange chicken or whatever it is you're trying to sneakily eat here while we're on the podcast into your mouth. And let me ask the next one. What are you eating? Donnie.
I knew you were going to get there. So this is chicken nuggets. They are only partially reheated because I had to make a deadline, and I put buffalo sauce to make me forget about the fact that they're cold in the center.
Are they dino nuggets or are they like
tricky? They're actually mega nuggets, which is my favorite. There's extra cardboard or something in
there. Yeah.
So Doreen, you may be shocked.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
you know,
but like, they sound delicious that they're half frozen, but you know, sauce on there. It might help it be more enjoyable.
You know, like there's this, you know, like men hit maturity at different ages, and I just kind of peaked around like 13.
12?
And,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. So like, this is like the ideal.
But did you see him, Noreen? He was like, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, no, but at least he wasn't talking with his mouth full. So yeah. I appreciated that.
I'm quite good at this. It's right on my lunch hour. I have a lot of meetings and I nosh. George, what was your question?
My question is, Noreen, you've had some interesting exposure with your time at Brinker and like True Asset Management and the SMA management. Orion from the technology and TAMP perspective, mm-hmm. this role, your different board roles from a broker-dealer perspective. As you know, my role here is primarily dealing with our enterprise offering and broker-dealers, banks, et cetera. And previous to that was solely RIAs. And I've always said this, and I'm wondering if you agree with this and kind of your thoughts is like, I've noticed broker-dealers want to start looking more like institutional RIAs and have like advisory offerings. Right. And institutional RIAs kind of want to look like broker dealers in a way by having like a UMA platform and management platform and more outsourced services. Is that something that you're seeing as well? Is that especially like on the broker dealer side? Like, I always think it's interesting that there's still like, is advisory the way to go? How do we get there? That type of stuff. Right.
So I'm going to challenge the lens there. I think most of the bigger broker dealers had both businesses. They might've had different business heads, but majority of the advisors in most of my career, because it was all fee-based, were fiduciary, were offering investment advisory products, partnering with third parties like a Brinker Capital to provide that best-in-class asset management outcome. And I think that there is a weird word choice around broker-dealer, RIA. I think the future is wealth management, right? Like big, broad service to clients. Where commission type of product, where you might just pay once, might be the best answer, you know, the best choice for that particular purchase versus an ongoing fee for service, which would be advisory, right? Depending on that engagement. So when you look at, like, think of a Commonwealth as an example, it's majority fee-based.
Yeah.
And if you think of some of our other clients, they definitely all have some commission business. A lot of these businesses grew up selling American funds originally. Like, so that was a great choice for people when they sold it to them. Converting that to a pure fee-based based on how long that's been with doesn't quite make sense. So I think having as many ways to serve your clients, the end consumer being that end investor, in my point of view, is the best way to deliver a holistic wealth management experience and get away from all this, like, I do this, you do, like, I don't know. I think it's so yesterday, like a future forward is that you come to me, you have a problem. My job as a financial advisor is help you solve it.
So I'm going to drill in on that. And George's question is pretty similar with mine. So would you say that the traditional fee-based advisory model does not serve the mass affluent effectively?
I think the traditional fee-based one can, but it depends. So when you think of, like, is there insurance products that might better serve from a longevity perspective? And what's the best way to price those? It's continually challenging the product development and the product providers and creating an experience that's going to best serve that end investor. You think of, there's some programs out there now that are providing structured notes. Part of that's important if you think of, now I'm living in retirement. How am I going to protect my downside? You know, then there's all this alternative investments. How are we bringing the alternative products into that space? But do they belong there? That's an area that, in terms of mass affluent and how we're defining that, is important. But it's the ability to give the advisor the depth and breadth of a product offering that can serve the needs of their different constituencies and not one size fits all. Like, I just don't believe it. Like, I think that both of you, children are younger. Mine are all, like, my youngest is a senior in college. My needs now are very different than your family needs, right? So each of us in our lifetime, that's not very different than a financial advisor serving us. So I can get on my high horse about this, but I do think nomenclature sometimes hurts the outcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that.
I agree. You know, it's really interesting because you give a different perspective that the broker dealers, and I know nomenclature aside, you know, like, I am a broker dealer who can support securities services as well as advisory services. I'm in a more competitive position than a national RIA that isn't necessarily set up and equipped to be able to control the brokerage side of their business. And the way that I think I was mentioning with, like, our RIAs not equipped to serve mass affluent, what I see a lot of it, especially at larger RIAs, is they have their minimums. And it's like, well, we've got these Henrys, we got to deal with our clients' kids. How do we do that? Well, we're going to strip out a bunch of those valuable services. And then we're going to charge a lower fee. But ultimately, what you get then is a commoditized investment management fee, which offers very little value in terms of planning, paying down debts, and saving for, you know, retirement. So it's really interesting to hear your perspective on that. Now, again, devil's advocate, because I'm more on the RIA side, George is on the broker-dealer side. The argument is, effectively, broker-dealers are limited in their ability to compete for those advisors that do have fee-based clients. You know, they don't have necessarily commission-based products. And the national RIAs are more equipped to be able to handle those because they don't have to basically cater to the lowest common denominator. And forgive me for the terminology, but what's your thoughts there?
So I think the more point isn't about, so think about it. It isn't necessarily commission or fee-based. It's the fact that they've curated a type of advisor that they can deliver a more appropriate solution. When you have all different types of advisors, from the highest fiduciary and to ones that are just starting, now you might have in the past scaled your business by creating a very baseline offering. The bigger broker dealers, as we know, have kind of started to segment their business. So they're not doing a one size fits all. I think it ties back to that one size fits all discussion. Yeah. And I will say, which is kind of interesting, RIAs use that line of, we are so fancy, we do it this way for recruiting. And BDs do this other line, we're so fancy for recruiting. So some of that isn't how we serve them. It's how they are fighting for the advisor's share of wallet. So yeah. I think it's kind of an interesting discussion. And honestly, until I went to Orion, I didn't really understand the difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you were to say tomorrow, you know what? I want to be a financial advisor. I want to try this. How would you set up your business? What would you do?
Well, at this point, because what I know is fee-based, but what I would want to understand is what other products were available. And mm-hmm. I would want to offer the products. I think, Johnny, as you just said earlier about some of my younger emerging new clients, are they better served in a fee environment? Maybe not.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I thought about becoming a financial advisor and then I realized how hard that job is.
Yeah.
I would base it around financial planning, which I think is our best ones we know that do that. I would use a behavior overlay, which is, you know, I'm a huge fan of Dr. Crosby mm-hmm. and what we've done on behavioral finance. But I would want to understand what your needs are and deliver those products that you need. And I think, I hope I would be agnostic to whether it was pure fees or for pure commission. But I think the marketplace, the product lineup is actually emerging in a way that there is definitely a lot of fee-based products out there. They've mm-hmm. converted most of
yeah.
them.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely seems like that's the trend. But again, I'm on the RIA side. So the narrative is very different on that side. Independent broker dealer advisors are looking at potentially joining RIAs. And it seems like the broker dealers have been preparing themselves by putting together more open architecture platforms. You know, you don't clear through our clearing firm. You can custody with an RIA custodian and get additional services. Like you mentioned, an open architecture platform with potentially, you know, Orion Portfolio Solutions, Brinker, your own strategies. But it is interesting because you look at the industry and just the consolidation of the industry in the broker dealer space, and it's definitely happening. You've got these aggregators of broker dealers, which are quite substantial now, mm-hmm. right? And then you've still got some of these smaller broker dealers. I'd imagine it's becoming just more difficult for the smaller broker dealers because of the increased cost to compete.
And then how are they differentiating themselves? How are they differentiating their offering? What are they providing to? So think about the independent broker dealer market. We're taking the wirehouses out of that discussion.
Yeah.
Those are all small business owners they serve. I will tell you the most interesting thing for me to sit in the room at Commonwealth and they're talking to the financial advisors. And when I'm sitting on the board at Commonwealth, we're talking about internally about all the great stuff they're doing. And then sitting there and realizing they serve independent business owners, which I knew, yep. but then I felt. Because I've never been really a lot of times in a full room with just one firm, right? I've been multiple advisors and usually selling our stuff. So it's a little different. So now I'm there just as really a participant to sit and listen. And that was fascinating, because think of how hard it is. And this would be the same thing for the national RIA firms. Mm-hmm. Each of these advisors are their own business with their own point of view, their own value proposition to their clients. And how are they creating optionality for them? Mm-hmm. And that's why you do need organizations like mm-hmm. Orion. I'll give a plug for our company.
Thank you.
That allows for optionality. Like, that's what does not happen in a traditional large big box shop.
Yeah.
I think, like, we've been, I don't know if brutally aware is the right word, but we've been aware of that for years. Like, Eric Clark coined that years ago. But once you've met one RIA, you've met one RIA. They've all figured out ways to do it differently, you know, client experience differently, trade differently, bill differently. And when you think you've heard it all, here comes another firm that's like, we do it in a way you've never heard of. Right.
Yeah.
And isn't that great for their clients, right? Because they built their businesses mm-hmm. around their personality and the people they serve. And to me, like, why would you ever want to take that away? Why wouldn't you want to give the tools that allows them to drive that?
I think it pushes the industry forward as a whole. Absolutely.
Yes. I would agree with that.
You derailed my line of questioning, George.
Yeah, I got a bunch of questions.
I want to go to tech. Can I go to tech?
That's where I was going.
Okay, good.
Gosh, we're on the same page. Look how in sync we are.
Yeah. So here's, I guess, you know, the one common question. I'm going to name names. All right. Because okay. I do that sometimes. But, you know, like coming back to my point about the lowest common denominator, a lot of broker dealers will just basically go and say, hey, here's our reporting system. And it's going to generate reports for clients and it's going to disappoint the masses. But some people are happy with it because it doesn't cost more. Whereas on the other side, the RIAs, I'd say, are spending very heavily in technology, right? Orion and the more advanced planning tools and tax tools are not cheap, you know, CRMs, it's a significant expense. So how does technology help an advisor personally from a financial perspective? How does it help put more food on their table, put toys in their garage?
So I think what's interesting to me is that if you were at a point in time and think of this, it was something when we were working, well, TD doesn't exist anymore, so we can talk about them, right? Like they would provide a lot of resources to that advisor that they didn't charge for. The advisor paid for it. They didn't quite know how they were paying for it. But again, it's like that discussion of how you were getting paid for that. And there was some break-even point by which they wouldn't have been in business if they weren't getting paid, right? It's hard if an advisor has built their practice about not paying for something.
Yeah.
And now they need to pay for it. And how do you navigate the steps? And what other costs are you stripping out? And it's hard to be like, hey, you don't need Joe or Sally on the front desk anymore. Well, no one wants to get rid of Joe or Sally. They've been with them for 20 years. So you can't really use that as like, oh, it'll be less expensive for you. The other one is like, use our managed portfolios. Well, they might love managing money. Mm-hmm. So all of this comes into a discussion of like, we're trying to sell our technology or sell asset management. This is not any different, but we're trying to take out something they weren't paying for before. Now tell them they need to pay for it. And yet they're going to make so much more money.
Yeah.
And we say, trust me.
Yeah. It is very much a you get what you pay for industry, in my opinion.
Yes.
I think it's really interesting too, as I've been exposed to more of the TAMP side and also the RIA side. There are certain things I think that just TAMPs in general come to RIAs and say, we're going to do all of this. And the RIA goes, those are the things I want to do.
Right.
I want you to do this, right? And it causes confusion. So that's been kind of an interesting thing to observe as we've taken some of these solutions across the boundaries.
Are you saying how difficult it is to get a TAMP into an RIA?
Well, like, yeah. Like I recently had a conversation where we spoke with an RIA and they were like, we're going to do your new account opening. We're going to do all of your like cashiering and we'll talk to your reps and we'll do this and we'll do your billing and your trading. And they went, well, we don't want you to do the client and rep stuff. That's the only part we want to do.
Right.
We just want you to do billing and trading.
Yeah. That's where I think the evolution of OCIO has helped tremendously. Noreen, those conversations have never been more active than they are now.
Because you're not displacing, right? Like you're not displacing the value that they have. You're becoming additive in a way they're willing to pay for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like there's this investment platform that's available. We can trade your strategies. We can handle your billing. We can handle getting reports out the door. But you still maintain your custodial relationship and control that the check is in the mail and it's going to get to your client, which in the TAMP world, you're like, hold on, let me call the TAMP and you know, I'll get in touch with them. And it's a different model.
Well, I love the TAMP. Don't be trying to say, hold on, call the TAMP. Like, let's get over
I'm biased. No, but what I'm saying is there's an intermediary now.
Yeah, right?
It's an intermediary standing between you and client service timelines.
It goes back to what you were saying, Noreen, with nomenclature. Of nomenclature of having this is the solution set for this type and this is the solution set for this type and kind of blending that into like, here's a custom solution set for what your business looks like, you know?
Now, I used to call it Jenga, right? So if you think of the problem with even the traditional Brinker Capital TAMP perspective, it was bundled.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing depended on you buying the whole bundle.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have a way to pull the pieces out. So then we started thinking about even from a custodial perspective, right? Because that was a control point, not an economic one. So then we started thinking through, right, like how do we unbundle the pieces like Jenga? You don't want it to fall through and you still get paid. So if you don't want our asset allocation services, let's arguably say that was 10 basis points. Okay, you don't have to pay for the 10. You're still going to pay the other basis points for the other things. You don't want us to handle the client reporting. Okay, now, can we make the case? And can we deliver on fully taking the stack, fully buying in on this, that we can make your business more efficient over time, maybe. But depending on what they need and what they want, and you should have some optionality. I guess it goes back to that. Like, as you said, one RA is not the next RA. Like, how are we serving them? But there is a point in time where you no longer can do anything, because if they don't want to buy some of the blocking and tackling, you got to walk away. Because then nobody's making any money. It's a mess now. The Jenga, all the stuff has fallen down.
Yeah.
But I just think there's a great book, but this whole concept is around technology doesn't disrupt things. It's unhappy clients do. At the very end of the day, is that how are you putting together a service offering that fits what that investor is looking for? And then the financial advisor is going to be very interested in paying for that.
My tech question was, given that you had the exposure to Orion and the tech side, you know, when Donnie and I first started selling Orion, like we would, I don't know, we would do a full demo of the application in about 45 minutes. And then we'd spend another 15 minutes like just talking next steps or what are you going to do this weekend? Now it's just tough to give an overview of everything in an hour. And it's been kind of cool to see things like household trading and direct indexing and financial planning and client experience, like things that were so, they were just things that advisors were like, I don't even want to think about that. Cause like one, I can't wrap my head around the concept. And two, if I spent 6 months learning how to do it and doing it, I would be using Excel spreadsheets every day to implement it. And now things like can happen in minutes that couldn't happen before. Where I'm going with this is, like, given some of your recent roles, what do you kind of think might be next? Something you've seen where you're like, that's where technology is going to take that into the next level.
Well, so I just did a Zoom call and used the AI function to take the notes. OMG.
Yeah.
Really?
Like, unbelievable. Like, I can't even wrap my head. Now, it's not 100% perfect, right? It's early, right? But when you think about efficiencies for follow-up, Noreen will send this, like my to-do. I don't even have to think that hard about what I just promised someone that I was going to send.
Yeah.
And that is just one tool that I just found out about this week.
Yeah, I actually just sent, what did I send, George? The Microsoft tool? It's popping up now in my Microsoft suite. But apparently that too can look at everything in the Microsoft ecosystem for you, your emails. And so you could say, okay, this email thread, summarize this in 100 words, and it'll basically go about, you know, giving you, imagine trying to take, like if I sent you, Noreen, you know what my emails are like. I sent you like 5 emails. Just give me 100 words on what Donnie's saying.
Or give me 25 words. Give me the highlights. Like, think about how busy you are. Or prompt me when you know I didn't respond to something.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, so I think that if we look at the tools to make people...
Best next step.
More productive is the wrong way. I think more engaged.
Yeah.
So when I talk to you, I'm talking to you about what you want me to talk to you about. And we're having a fulsome conversation versus, oh yeah, I forgot that. And then because we're all running, and I think, you know, technology as a tool to help drive that. The prompts, I know that CRM, there's a lot of opportunity in there when you think of where AI is, and I know we're doing some work there as well. But I think that what I think has happened that's changed, George, in those conversations you had, when you guys first started selling it, it was amazing, the blocking and tackling stuff, right? Like, no one had that. So that's what they wanted you to talk about. All this other stuff was because they couldn't do the blocking and tackling. As more and more the basis of the business gets taken care of through technology, now all of a sudden the conversations can change. And you know, the whole client experience is different because you want it personalized.
I would have advisors hang up the phone on me. The first question would be like, hey, are we able to reconcile our data files within Orion? And I'm like, no. And they're like, that's, you know, we own that. Our clients would really be disappointed if we weren't matching positions and transactions in the morning.
What are we going to do with these 3 servers in the closet behind my office?
That too. Yeah. It's like, well, I just upgraded Advent Access and, you know, bought a new server. And like, I don't want that to be, you know, money thrown in the fireplace. And now we're talking about like really sophisticated advisors who are like, hey, I build an asset allocation strategy and I want you to trade it for me, you know, and it's like, I might have some sophisticated things that we need to deal with. And then we're like, hey, we've got this custom indexing, index replication or SMA replication and tax managed things.
What I would share with you, what was most fun about, I mean, there's a lot of things were fun, but what I loved about the tax management, the things that we wanted to do at Brinker before we got married to Orion, we could not do ourselves.
But you were doing it, right?
We were doing it, but we were using a third party, but the reporting wasn't what we wanted it to be. Like all of the pieces. And now that's the beauty of the marriage, right? When you can take really quality product development on the tech side. To me, that is just amazing.
I think it was a game changer on our side too, because that would be something we would develop and put out in the market and be like, hopefully they use it, right? But now we have this other side that uses it and says, this is the feedback we're getting. Change this. We can change that.
Right.
This would be better if we did this, change this, and you can change it. It's a better experience all the way around. Like it comes up every once in a while. Like, are you competing with me? And it's like, we're complimenting you.
Yeah.
We're going to be in this together and drive this forward. Right. And we don't get that much more because I think it's been very, very clear. Custom indexing, a great example of it.
Right. Because the thing is that as the tools, we're going to give any of our clients the best tools that we're using. It's not like they're going to get the B version.
Right.
You're getting the best.
I have to tell that to people, though. They don't believe it. You know, that's the thing. They're like, well, you know, OPS and Brinker, they're using things that I don't have access to. And it's like, no, let me show you their proposal tool. You want to use this?
Mm-hmm. Right. Here you go. And no one's so crazy about that. It would cost so much money to have two versions of it.
I know.
Oh,
right?
No, yeah.
It actually would be a bad business decision. Like it would be a really foolish business decision to have like, here's our fancy version. You get the B version. Well, first of all, like that doesn't make any sense. But again, that's when you see the marriage of those things. And honestly, there's things our clients are going to do from a tech perspective that we're never going to do.
Yeah.
So of course those things have to be different.
Yeah.
Because they have a different business model than we have. Sure. So that's the exciting part of it.
So we went down a rabbit hole. We were, you know, kind of talking about tech. And can I come back to like current events though, Maureen? Sure. So Eric Clark's decided, you know, after being the shepherd of this flock for so long, he's decided to take a little bit of a step back. And we now have a new CEO. Mm-hmm. I'd love to get your thoughts on the organization, the strategic focus, and hopefully, you know, you had an opportunity to spend time with Natalie professionally, personally, and be able to share some insights into where she wants to take this organization.
So what's exciting about one, kudos to Eric, right? Like, congratulations, man. Like you ran a race like nobody's business. So, and you're going to continue to run it because we still need him with us on the board. So he's still a part of the Orion ecosystem in a way that'll never go away, right? In a positive way. So kudos to him. Organizations get to a certain point where your skill sets, while you could do them, it's not as much fun even. Like to have someone come in now with this much larger organization that he put together, you know, we'll give him credit, put this all together, and now to take it to the next level. And I've had the privilege of knowing Natalie, gosh, it goes back, I think 2016, maybe even longer than that, and admired her from, you know, from a personal and professional level. I was so excited when they picked her. I know, I guess I was more big than, but it really, like, I was so happy for our organization because the breadth and depth of her experience, there's things that I didn't even know that things she had done in the past. And I'll leave her to share her story because I think that'll be a fun podcast next. But
we're not going to have her on.
She has a beautiful leadership style. Like, she is very smart. She provides context by decision-making. She makes a decision. She executes against the decision. She brings the team along. She's been at RIA. She's worked in the BD world. She ran AssetMark, which we'll share it from a reputational point of view. Advisors that work with them don't like to leave them. So she can bring that context into what we're doing on the wealth management side. So I think she's the right CEO for now. And I'm fully supportive. And I can't wait to see what she and all of you do. Like, and, you know, being on the board, you have an interesting perspective because you get to still participate, but you're not the operator. Mm-hmm. Like, you sit there and you have conversations, you provide some guidance as appropriate, you're brought into a conversation. But most importantly, you all are running, right? Like, you are running the race. And to see her as a leader and her style for what we need to go forward, I think is really exciting. And having all of you rally around that, I think is going to be important because it's not a one-person job, as we know. It's the whole team that matters.
Yeah, we're excited to start working with her for sure.
I get to meet her. This is not going to air before it, but Schwab Impact. We're going to be doing an event, and you know, I'm sure Natalie's going to have an opportunity to meet with hundreds of our clients at the conference.
And she cares. And I know that she's going to be spending some time with advisory boards. Like, I know it's important to her to hear from who her clients are. So I think you guys are going to be excited. And I'm excited. So it's a good deal. And, you know, I still feel like it's my baby. Like, you know, like Orion, I was a part of Brinker.
I know.
I felt like I was my child. Like, so to know that in the Orion ecosystem that all of this is cared for, it's just, I'm sure the way Brian McLaughlin felt about Red Tail, like you create something, it becomes part of a bigger ecosystem. Eric, about Orion, like, you guys feel the same way, right? Like, this is part of your family.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was here when they were handing out 150 billion t-shirts, right? George, how long ago was that?
So, funny story. Judd Mackrell was our head of marketing at the time, and he made these shirts to celebrate Orion crossing 150 billion in assets on the platform. And he held it up to me, and I go, why did you make a shirt that says one SOB?
It looks like one SOB.
He, like, turned it around. He goes,
it's a weird font.
Oh, shoot.
Like the Nebraska license plate fiasco.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. So I think we're in good hands and I could not be more thrilled.
Yeah, it's been a fun journey. It's exciting to see where it'll go next.
And as you all know, I think we all know change is constant. And so
The
ability to bring in a different perspective that'll help align the different pieces will be important to our clients and to all of the people in the organization.
Can I say, Donnie, I mean, you're looking great. This salt and pepper thing that you got going here, you look like...
I feel like that's a double-sided compliment.
You look like Tony Stark's brother who owns a bunch of car washes in New Jersey.
Oh, you know what? I actually...
Don't know about car washes, but that was a good one, Tony Stark's brother.
Yeah, Tony Stark, he's a pretty good-looking guy, I think. He's an advisor in our demo environment. Thanks, George. This changes the entire relationship.
Yeah.
Well, on that segue, I appreciate Noreen, you joining us today and answering all of our questions, putting up with our antics. And, you know, the thing that I think is really most impressive is the lack of preparation that we provided with you for this show. So
I truly appreciated that. I'm like, are we even a go?
You just show up at a location. This is the time.
Donnie said that as if the lack of preparation we gave you, assuming we were prepared. I just want to say we were all on the same level of preparation.
Well, so in the beginning, Noreen made a reference to some document that she saw with something. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're even referring to.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, my goodness. I'm on the calendar. Are we still a go? But most importantly, I think what I want to know when we follow up on this is how you're figuring out the toast question. Because honestly, you know how annoying that not getting a good properly toasted piece of bread is?
I think the only answer is like natural gas.
How awesome would it be? Orion will solve your back office challenges and will even toast your bread.
Okay. So
there you go.
Just to bookend this whole conversation with this, we were at, Donnie, do you remember when we did our offsite in Washington, D.C.? And we went to the Smithsonian. It was an exhibit on Americana. And they had, I swear to you, they had an exhibit that was the evolution of the toaster from 200 years ago to now. Do you want to know the only thing we've done to a toaster? We put a shell around it so that the wires were no longer exposed.
Okay.
That's it. That's all we've done.
So at least people aren't getting hurt anymore by touching the wires.
I think they still are because they're throwing forks and knives in there to dig their English muffin out.
What about the bagel slicer? Can we please talk about the bagel slicer and the design between that medieval thing?
The bagel guillotine?
Oh, exactly. The bagel guillotine. Yeah.
It's a guillotine. Guillotine.
Guillotine, I think. Yeah. I'm not French.
Anywho, if we had a nickel for every time we ended on guillotine. Noreen, it was really great to see you. It's fun to hang out and catch up with you. And congratulations on the graduate degree and the new company, the board positions that you have. And we'd love to have you back to hear how everything's going at some point.
I'd be happy to come back. And it was fun to see both of you. Really.
Great to see you again. Thanks, Noreen.
All right.
Thanks for listening to The Fuse Show. In each episode, your co-host, George Figuera, and me, Ryan Donovan, will share our take on top fintech news, welcome industry leaders and colleagues to share their perspectives. We will keep you up to date on all that's happening at Orion, leverage the fiduciary flywheel to prospect, plan, invest, and achieve for your firm. Feel free to share your thoughts on the show with us and send us questions to cover in future episodes. Just shoot us an email at thefuseshow@orion.com.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Fuse Show. This podcast is brought to you by Orion and produced by Turncast. You can subscribe to future episodes in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information about Orion and The Fuse Show, visit us at orion.com.